This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. Phone-in elements of these shows are not available, but if you'd like to comment or give us feedback on our shows, you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com. Alternatively, you can find this and other podcasts on iTunes or Spotify using the keyword Love Sport.
Good evening. Welcome to the Norwich City Fan Show here on Love Sport. It is 2 minutes past 10 and we are going through to 11 p.m. this evening on our Sunday night fan show special. Sunderland coming up at half 10, but right now it is all things the Canaries. A narrow, a very, very narrow 1-0 defeat to Liverpool yesterday, but there's no shame in that at all, is there? Losing to the league leaders who seem to be battering every single record under the sun that has ever existed, not just in the Premier League, but in football in general. And a long come Norwich fairy tale was not to be yesterday. Still 7 points adrift of safety in the Premier League and just one win in the past 13 Premier League games for Daniel Farke's men. But hey, let's try and be positive. The football is still good. Delighted to say I'm joined by Michael Bailey, sports journalist covering Norwich City for The Athletic. Hello, Michael.
Good night there, Matt.
Yes, very good to have you on the show, buddy. Now, you were at the game yesterday, so let's get right into it. For a long period, it looked like Norwich might actually frustrate Liverpool and be the only team, the second team, I should say, to take 2 points off the league leaders this season. Sadly, Sadio Mane popped up with his 100th of the season. It was not to be. His 100th of the season, I should say. His 100th in English football. That would be an impressive record, wouldn't it?
I wouldn't put it past them, to be honest, yeah, the way they've been playing. Yes, it was wonderfully taken goal as well, wasn't it? So I think no one inside Carrow Road, although you could genuinely sense the belief growing, especially in the second half as the game wore on. I don't think anyone was sitting there in any way thinking that Liverpool wouldn't somehow manage to conjure something up. I think maybe if it had been another 10 or 12 minutes into the game, people would have started believing it a bit more. But yeah, I think what would have been interesting is had Norwich have managed to got themselves ahead, it would have been very interesting to have seen how Liverpool would have dealt with that. I think we would have then really been able to tell how many gears they had or whether they were just struggling to find the rhythm that they had before their short break. But I mean, from Norwich's point of view, there was nothing. It probably seems a bit stupid to say it, but there was nothing really surprising about what they were doing. They played well with the ball. They were tight and resolute for a lot of the game. They created a couple of chances, and on another day may well have taken one. So we've always seen that they've had that quality all season. It's been a peculiar few months because the margins of them not picking up points and not being able to win games have been so fine, but so often they've come out on the wrong side of that. And sadly, despite the endeavour and the wonderful effort from last night, it was the same story in the end.
Yeah, endeavour's one thing, isn't it? But you certainly need to put the ball in the back of the net, which has been part of the problem for Norwich City this season. And funny how football works, isn't it? Because Liverpool, like I said, are breaking all these records. We won't reel off all the stats because I'm sure every other show on the station has been doing that today. So I'm going to leave it for this particular show. But even coming into this, you thought, do you know what? Norwich might just be that team, especially with the whole along come Norwich scenario that we tend to see so many times in Norwich City's history, not just this season, of course. And that chance, Lucas Rook, we've got to talk about it, threw on goal, an opportunity to score his first goal for the club. I understand he's got Timi Pukki beside him, so he thinks, yep, he's a better goal scorer than me. But if he'd just gone for goal, it probably would have been Norwich City 1, Liverpool 0.
Yes, it was a golden opportunity. I am slightly reticent to talk about it because I feel had it have gone in or a goal been given, then it would have gone back to VAR, and I think he probably would have been drawn offside. But by the same token, I think Alisson Becker did really well to come out so quickly because Rook was quite calm under that pressure. But I think the keeper almost took out a real clear opportunity to shoot quite quickly. And then obviously the pass wasn't quite strong enough for Teemu to run on and slot it away. But that's kind of been, that has been a recurring theme that Norwich have had really good chances and not been able to take them. Obviously, they've tended to fall to Teemu Pukki as well. So that's been a slight shame, given he has such undoubted quality. And at the start of the season, he was taking those chances. I actually thought that the chance later on in the second half, it might have been when it was already 1-0. I can't quite remember. But when Emi Buendia played in Teemu Pukki, and he took it really early, but just hit it straight down Becker's throat. You know, had he hit that shot in an accurate way, then that was probably almost a better chance than the other one, and at least it was definitely onside. So, earlier, really, it would have been very interesting to see how Liverpool would have dealt with it had Norwich got themselves ahead, because I think then we'd have really been able to tell how much they were having to force their form. Because watching it now being panned out, I kind of feel like they probably had a couple of gears and were always pretty calm. I mean, they've been so relentless that they were probably, even with 12 minutes to go, it probably would have been the same, another 8 or 9 minutes to go. They just would have backed themselves to have won the game. It's what Norwich do last year in the Championship when they were playing so well. I think you get to a point where you just feel it doesn't matter when it's going to come, it will come, and we know it will come. And I do think there was an element of that last night.
Yeah, and just speaking about the goals as well, I think it's 2 goals in 5, the first time since November that the side has failed to score in back-to-back league games. Also, which I thought was an interesting stat, was the fact that they failed to attempt a single shot in the first half of a league game for the first time ever under Daniel Farke. That's the first time it's happened in the club's history since April 2014. Not being able to score goals, listen, it's a simple argument, but it's crucial, isn't it, in order to survive in the Premier League, and also conceding a joint league high of 48 goals as well. And yes, I guess that's what you'd expect from a team at the bottom of the Premier League, but doesn't bode well, does it?
No, and it doesn't bode well from the games that have gone before it. I mean, whatever happened last night, it was quite a peculiar set of circumstances, given they were playing a side that has dropped 2 points all season. I've never seen anything like this at this point of a season, and I'm not a particularly young man. It's phenomenal what they're doing and how relentless they've been. You take that theme back, you look at the Newcastle game where, you know, Norwich had all the chances in the world to probably win about 3 Premier League matches and couldn't force one. And again, what I would say is defensively they have improved. That Newcastle game was a game where I felt they probably would have lost it. I don't like the word naive, but maybe just a little bit less experienced in terms of the team as a Premier League side. That is a positive. They have conceded a lot of goals, but they are harder to beat now. But it has been probably a more consistent issue, and it is a harder one to rectify, that they just don't score enough goals from the chances. I mean, they do take a lot of shots. I think they're mid-table with chances created, and we all know Emi Buendia is one of the most creative players in the Premier League this year, which is phenomenal, and it's a slight shame we didn't see him until 7 minutes from the end last night. But taking those chances has been an issue. Andre Duda was brought in to help rectify some of that, to give Norwich of a higher quality who might be able to chip in with some goals. And Teemu, that really hasn't had an effect on his debut. It's a little bit in and out, and he himself had a great chance at Newcastle too. So it is still relatively early days for that, and I think there is enough to think that they can build on it. They've got an interesting run now of some tricky games against some very good teams. They're not Liverpool, but they're very good teams. And then after that, it's a run of games that they will have to win. They could do with picking up some really positive results, though, against Wolves and Leicester and Sheffield United, which are all coming up in the next few weeks.
Indeed. Before we move on from the game itself, Michael, I just want to very quickly touch on the VAR, not controversy, but the slight issue with regards to Sadio Mane's goal. Now, we've delved deep into VAR, the pros and primarily the cons of it on this show many, many times before. And I know Daniel Farke after the game was quicker really to credit Sadio Mane for what was a brilliant piece of skill, as you said, bringing down that Jordan Henderson ball and swivelling and finishing beyond Tim Krul. But Daniel Farke did also say, you know, we've already learned this season that VAR is not on our side. Now, I don't think it was a foul. the push, the slight shove on Christoph Zimmermann. However, I think the VAR and the Premier League have built a rod for their own back, because if we look back to a game, and there's been a few instances this season, the one that sticks out for me was the game involving Liverpool at Selhurst Park earlier on in the season, when I think Dejan Lovren was slightly pushed over in the box and that led to Crystal Palace scoring. That was brought back because it was deemed to be a foul. Surely, if that is a foul, and that was a slightly weaker push, I'd say, than the one that Mane put on Zimmermann last night. So, if you're pulling that back, should this one potentially have actually been a foul?
Well, that's a fair point. And I hadn't really thought about that at the until you just mentioned it. I think we probably have, and again, this is us all adjusting to VAR. It's a point that the inconsistencies won't be removed by VAR, because you're dealing with subjective calls. And I think, you know, last night was probably a very good example of clear and obvious. You imagine that Stuart Atwell had seen it, felt it probably wasn't a push. VAR looked at it and thought, well, we don't think it's a push either. You know, we'll go with what you've said, and away you go. And so I think generally most people can can accept that as a way forward and the way it will work. And sure, there'll be other instances earlier in the season where maybe the on-field referee made a change. You're right, it does get very difficult when VAR then overturns things, and I think we've had all manner of inconsistencies. There are two VAR issues that really constantly come back to me. One is Teemu Pukki's offside goal against Tottenham, which would have put Norwich 2-0 up over Christmas. I think that was a travesty, because it proved how flawed the technology is, yet it ultimately cost Norwich, and that was a pivotal game, and I think a pivotal moment in the season as it looks at the moment. And I think that was a horrendous call. And there was another one where against Manchester United, it was the weekend, I think, that everyone was criticising VAR for not overturning penalty calls. Hmm. And all of a sudden it went a bit nuts. And I think Brighton got a dubious penalty at Everton on the Saturday. And then come the Sunday, Dan James basically bumped into Ben Godfrey and went down. And VAR looked at the call for 2 minutes and gave a penalty. And although it didn't have a actual particular effect on the game, as a VAR call, it was a bit of a shocker, and kind of for me underlined that the problem is dealing with the humans, not necessarily the system, because there are even the offside calls, you've got the humans drawing the line and they're making an interpretation of whether that's accurate or not ultimately. So I think it's very hard to judge it and consistently this season, because it is the first season, and I think there are so many things to be ironed out. I'm crying out for the communication between, say, the officials and VAR to be made available to people in the stadium. We need to hear from them and what they're deciding. It's the only way the system will work in the long term. And that would then explain the decision from last night and other ones going forward. I think that has to happen. I don't think it will anytime soon. But I mean, personally, I've wanted VAR to come in. I saw it at the World Cup and thought there was real hope for how it would improve things. I think it's a long way off doing that so far, if I'm brutally honest, but I hope it'll get there.
I completely agree with you. Yeah, and we heard the chants as well today at Villa Park, didn't we? It's not football anymore. Aston Villa fans singing that as Tottenham were awarded a penalty via VAR on that occasion. It probably was a penalty, but still, the method of getting there, I absolutely detest. Michael, before you go, it's been great having you on. Speaking of Aston Villa, of course, they lost today right at the death against Spurs. And I suppose when you look at it, it's not been the worst weekend for Norwich, this this particular weekend, because teams around them have dropped points. So we've got 12 games to go. Realistically, what are we looking at? Are we looking at a great escape? Like I said, 7 points adrift. There's still hope, surely.
Well, I mean, I hope you're not accusing me of smiling when Spurs scored that winner earlier. Absolutely not. But I think Norwich's biggest issue probably is that it's going to be a high tally. If Norwich were going to try and have to get to sort of 34 points, then I think I'd feel much more confident about them producing something pretty special. I think it's going to be closer to 40, and I think that's going to make life very difficult. I just can't write them off in my head, because they feel like there are very small margins. And having seen before, when things click, they can click and then they can sustain. And the way Norwich have done it, there's nothing going on really that's a surprise. They've built their squad. They all know each other. They've learnt so much in the season so far that they are improving. You can see them improving, and you know that they have much more potential as a group, even if it's just in the next few months, to do something special. And the teams above them, there will be teams and clubs that will be panicking. They've already changed managers. There'll be players who don't want to contemplate what's going to happen over the next few months. And there'll be a huge amount of pressure, maybe much more pressure at some of those other clubs than at Norwich. So I still think there's a potential, but at this point, they've just got to do it. And it's just going to come down to whether they can just get themselves over the line in enough matches quickly so that then they can have the belief going into the rest of the running.
Absolutely. Michael, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure, Matt.
Lovely stuff. That was Michael Bailey there, Norwich City reporter for The Athletic. Next up, we have Jacob Robinson on the line from Canary Cast, just looking ahead to the games coming up. All the other news in and around Norwich City. Of course, a big tribute to Justin Fashanu at the game on Saturday, wasn't there? Jacob, coming up next on the Norwich City Fan Show.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
It's the Norwich City Fan Show here on Love Sport. Before we get to Jacob Robinson from Canary Cast, a bit of news that's filtering through from the football world, and that is that football has again been plunged into alleged racist abuse, apparently occurring in the game between Porto and Vitória Guimarães today, this evening. Now, Porto forward Musa Marega had to be restrained by his teammates and his manager, Sergio Conceição. He scored what ended up being the winner for Porto in the 60th minute. Now, he used to play for Vitória, had a very good, successful loan spell, to be fair, on loan at Vitória. He scored what ended up being the winner in this game in the 60th minute. They were away from home. They won 2-1. And then, around 68 minutes, he appeared to be visibly upset. When he scored the goal, he was pointing towards his skin. Now, Marega alleges that he had been racially abused throughout the series of the game. He then decided he was booked for his celebration, and he decided to leave the pitch. He was restrained by teammates, by fans. And Marega, after the game, actually wrote on Instagram and said, "I would just like to tell these idiots who come to the stadium to make racist chants." And then he says a few choice words. He says, "I hope I never see you on a football field again. You are a disgrace. And I also thank the referees for not defending me and for giving me a yellow card because I defend my skin colour." Conceição then later said, "We are a family regardless of nationality, skin colour, hair colour. We are human. We deserve respect. What happened here is unfortunate." So it is yet another example of racist abuse, alleged racist abuse. We must say that the UEFA three-step protocol didn't need to be put into action because Marega, on voluntary, decided to leave the pitch. On the line now, we have Jacob Robinson from Canary Cast. Hello, Jacob.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. It's great having you on the show this evening. I did just have to very quickly there speak about Musa Marega. And really, it's quite fitting in a sense because there was a tribute this weekend to Justin Fashanu. Now, this is a player who came out as gay in 1990. Around 8 years later, he took his own life. And, you know, with all these issues around homophobic abuse, around racist abuse in football at the moment, this is quite poignant, really. And Norwich City on Saturday unfurled a giant rainbow banner of Fashanu, which featured the great Barry Davies commentary, of course, from Match of the Day when Fashanu scored in that game against Liverpool. It was voted as goal of the season in the early 80s on Match of the Day. But lovely to see a tribute for Fashanu at Norwich yesterday.
Yeah, definitely. I think it shows that no matter what happens on the pitch, obviously we've had a difficult season, that the club never forgets who's been there previously. And it just shows how much of a community we are as a club, and that, you know, we'll never forget who's been playing for the club before.
And it was good. Like, Di Cunningham also spoke out, didn't she? She's part of Proud Canaries too. And like you said, it's great that he's treasured in the city, almost, in a sense, isn't he? From scoring that goal, and such an understated celebration it was at the time. I remember he beat Ray Clements, didn't he? Who was a hugely established goalkeeper for Liverpool and England. And I think when instances like this happen, it's so important that clubs like Norwich City, and we know the community within Norwich is so strong, and the feeling was so strong at the game on Saturday as well. And today's incident with Moussa Marega, which has happened literally about half an hour ago in Portugal, just goes to show that, listen, it was 1990 that Justin Fashanu came out, a long, long time ago, and we're still suffering from these problems.
Yeah, totally. And we've got to show the future supporters as well. Obviously, it's a family club in origin. A lot of young supporters need to know about it. You have to be respectful to every single person, no matter if they come out as gay, if they're black, no matter their religion. There's so many things which they're people before they're players, and that's the massive thing, really. We have to respect everyone. And as you say, it's great to see that Norwich are doing that. And hopefully it carries suit around the rest of the Premier League. Obviously, there's the Say No to Racism. It's a massive campaign, and we have to do as much as we can to respect every single player that comes onto the pitch, because at the end of the day, everybody's equal.
Yeah, indeed we do. Great tribute to Justin Fashanu yesterday at that game between Norwich and Liverpool. We'll move on, Jacob, to the news that Alexander Tete has signed a one-year contract. That means he's going to remain at the club. It's an extension. He's going to remain at the club until 2021. He's now 33. He joined from Rennes back all the way back in August 2012. And the longest-serving player at the club now. He's made more than 200 appearances. He scored 8 goals in that time. The most memorable probably being the awkward, bizarre kind of toe punt at Old Trafford that gave Norwich a victory a few seasons ago. But good news that he's committed his short-term future to the club.
Yeah, fantastic. In a young group like ours, we need leaders, and Tete can show all of the young lads exactly what's needed and what's wanted at Norwich. Daniel Farke said time and time again how his leadership qualities come through. And he could be a massive part for Norwich next season. He might not play as much, obviously. His dodgy knees are well documented, and the Championship is a grueling campaign if it does end up the Norwich back there next season. We do have young players coming through, Melvin City, for example, joining. He could be the Tete heir of the throne, and who's best to learn from. There's been so many players that Norwich have tried to replace Tete with, like Doran, Randall's, Amadou this season. Constant amounts of players and money spent, and he's still there. It kind of shows that no matter what, every manager who's had him has always gone back to him. Speaks volumes, really, of his ability and his influence on the squad.
Okay, Jacob, in terms of where Norwich are at right now, of course, a defeat yesterday against Liverpool. They're 7 points adrift of Aston Villa. Aston Villa losing today against Tottenham Hotspur right at the death. So, listen, it wasn't the worst week in the world for Norwich City. Perhaps a very good week for the likes of Bournemouth, for Watford, of course, all the way inside there. West Ham as well. Good week for them, really, that their rivals weren't able to get a victory. But we have Michael Bailey on before, and he's saying, you know, there's still a chance for this Norwich side. As long as it's still mathematically possible, they will keep on going. 12 games to go now left in the season, 7 points adrift. What do you reckon? Can the boys do it?
Well, we have got winnable games, and my positive mindset is looking at when Leicester stayed up in the 2014-15 season. They went on that crazy run of 7 wins from 9 games. And like them, we haven't played badly this season. It's just been so narrow. Like, we've only lost by more than 2 goals in 3 games this season, which is incredible, really, considering we're bottom of the league. And we have winnable games. A lot of Norwich fans I've spoken to on the podcast have said that we've got winnable games left. We've got Everton at home, Brighton at home, West Ham at home, Burnley at home. Winnable games, which, in a realistic world, you'd hope Norwich can get points from and could put themselves in at least contention to stay up.
Nice. So, positivity, Jacob, basically.
Yeah. Well, you've got to be positive, haven't you? You know, we shouldn't really be in this league with the finances we've got. Stuart Webber and Daniel Farke have said repeatedly we've got 3 hits. I don't like using that personally. We are naive at times in terms of the way we play, but you've got to be positive, because at the end of the day, this is the best league in the world and this is where you want to be.
Indeed, you do. Jacob Robertson, thank you very much for joining us. Jacob from Canary Cast there. Positivity seems to be the word around Norwich City at the moment, doesn't it? A 1-0 defeat to Liverpool, but hey, they are going to bounce back next week. We'll have all the reaction from everything in the world of Norwich City next week on the Norwich City Fan Show here on Love Sports, Sunday evenings, 10 p.m. We'll see you then. It's Sunderland next.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news, and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.